Chapter 6 Mystery at Oak Ridge Manor. By fast passenger plane, the service from New York to Washington is a matter of less than 2 hours' airtime. Considerably less. And if a long-distance telephone call has been made from the New York airport, resulting in a speedy automobile waiting at the Washington airport, the time elapsed from Central Park to Upper Pennsylvania Avenue is phenomenally low. It lacked 5 minutes to midnight when Val, Nancy Fraser, and Nora Beamish stepped into that sedan and were gruffly greeted by the heavyset, saturnine man behind the wheel. It was Greg himself, as unknown and overlooked by the world as were the actions of that subtle force which he controlled.
"You people are playing hob with my sleep," Greg snarled as he sent the car through the gears with a rush, and they whirled off the airfield. "One would think I had nothing to do but stay up nights and nurse a lot of agents joyriding around the world. Let's have the straight of all this. I couldn't make heads or tails of your gabble over long distance a while ago, Easton."
That was Greg's way, and no one who took his orders paid any attention to it for very long. Behind it, Greg was fanatically on the job, as witness his presence here tonight, when he could have remained in bed and sent any of a score of men in his place. His presence, too, was testimony of the importance he placed on the curt reference to the black doctor that Val had made over long distance. Val sketched what had happened as they rolled swiftly toward the heart of the city, with the slim, white-lighted shaft of the Washington Monument spearing the heavens to the left, and the flood-lighted dome of the Capitol ballooning toward the sky off to their right. Greg sucked a cigar and listened closely, grunting to himself now and then. At the end, he blew his horn viciously at another car that seemed about to pass in front of them, flicked cigar ash out the window, and spoke.
"Carl Zuckin, eh? I'd give my liver to get him. He's caused me trouble before. Get this. There'll be hell and furies over this business. 2 English citizens murdered, one on a ship flying the United States flag and the other in New York. We can't pretend to know much about it, or the fact that we've been watching one of their men will be known. Can't have that. If they catch on we're suspicious of this chap who called himself Galbraith, they'll start hunting for the source of our information. It'll be embarrassing. Blast it."
"What was Galbraith after?" Val asked bluntly.
"Don't know," Greg said equally bluntly. "We got a tip that something unusual was in the air, and a man was being sent over here sub rosa, empowered to spend as high as £1 million for something. That's a hell of a lot of money, if you'll excuse my English, ladies."
"Humph," Nora snapped from the back seat beside Nancy. "I can do better than that, Jim Gregg, as you well know. Go right ahead."
Val grinned in the darkness, remembering that Nancy had said Nora Beamish had once been Greg's private secretary.
"Huh? All right," said Greg, thrown off his stride for a moment. "As I was saying, I cabled Miss Fraser to pick this man up and see what he did, and all this other has broken out of a clear sky. It's hard to tell what to make of it."
"I'd do a lot for £1 million, Nora observed acidly. "Doubtless this Zuckin would do the same. Has that occurred to you?"
"Galbraith didn't have £1 million on him," Greg snapped. "He was only empowered to offer it."
"If you were to offer me £1 million, Nora said, undaunted.
"I wouldn't," Greg growled. "But I'll offer you a suggestion. Let Easton give me his views on the matter."
"Well, I like that," Nora commented indignantly. "Out, Nancy, stop poking me with your elbow."
The silence was thick for a moment as Greg restrained himself with an effort.
"Nora Beamish," he said ominously. "Pipe down."
"Oh, all right," Nora said sulkily.
A match flare lighted Val's red face as he held the flame to a cigarette.
"Zuckin is after that money," he stated, tossing the match out the window. "If it's worth that to someone else, it's worth it to him. He can cash in on it." "If he gets it, you're all fired," Greg said calmly. "This thing is getting out of hand. I want Zuckin in custody before he gets a chance to do any more harm, and I want to know what Galbraith was after over here. Those two murders will go unsolved until we have all that. There'll be complications. You say you haven't the slightest idea what happened to Zakan?
He vanished out of the room, Val said slowly. His man had the room directly above that. By the time I could do anything, it was too late. Both were gone.
Val paused and looked out of the window.
Yes, Greg urged.
I don't know what Zakan was after in Galbraith's room, Val admitted, looking at him. Or why he killed Galbraith. But I've got a good hunch that wherever Galbraith was heading for, we can expect Zakan to appear sooner or later. He gained no money immediately by killing Galbraith, and from everything I've ever heard about the fellow, he never kills unless there's a good reason for it.
Where does that get you? Greg countered impatiently.
I know where Galbraith was going.
Ah, do you?
Greg suddenly chuckled and laid an approving hand on Val's arm.
I knew you wouldn't let them run you out on the end of a limb and saw it off. Now let's have the rest of it.
Val remembered Nora Beamish sitting quietly in the back seat and letting him talk.
This isn't really my case, he reminded. Miss Fraser may like to handle it her own way.
Ridiculous, Nancy jeered. The thing had gotten out of my hands. Where would I be if you hadn't barged into Galbraith's room just in time? I'm helping you now, and bother all modesty.
She's right. Let's have it, Greg agreed.
I don't know where this Raimi comes in with his dodging around New York or what to think of the couple he talked to, Val admitted. But the next move seems to be at Oak Ridge Manor. I came down here tonight as quick as possible to do that. If Zakan shows up there, we'll collar him and get the truth.
Why all the rush if you're going out there tomorrow? Greg queried irritably. You could have let me sleep.
Going out tonight, Val told him. It's only about an hour's drive. We'll stage an auto breakdown and go up to the house in search of a telephone. Or I'll say that Galbraith was found dead in New York with that address in his pocket and pass as a newspaper man asking for information. And in the morning you can post men around the place working with the information I get tonight.
Greg considered.
Good enough, he decided. But don't mention Galbraith. Let them expect him. Just look around the place and play dumb. It ought to work. They'll know nothing about what happened in New York tonight, of course.
They had traversed the long length of Pennsylvania Avenue as they talked. Greg turned into the curb at 14th and the Avenue, opened the door, and stepped out.
You might as well take this car, he said. I'll taxi home and get some sleep. I'll take you with me, Nora. You're probably tired out.
You will not, Jim Gregg, Nora said defiantly. Don't think because you okay my paycheck you can order me around all the time. I'm going out there with Nancy. If there's any car breakdowns and shenanigans, I'll fit right into the picture as the helpless mother. What are you laughing at?
At the idea of anyone thinking of you as helpless, Gregg choked. God help the people at the manor. They don't know what's landing on their doorstep. And I warn you, Nora, if you bungle anything, you'll come back in the office and take dictation. Good night.
And Greg departed hastily, still shaking with laughter.
The old hyena, Nora said heatedly, glaring out the window. I'll make him sweat for that.
Hartsville was a small suburban town south of Washington, some 30 minutes of fast driving. Houses were dark and wanly lighted streets deserted. But a gas station and a drugstore were still open for business. In the drugstore, Val asked casually as he bought a package of cigarettes,
Know of a place around here called Oak Ridge Manor?
Sure, was the prompt reply. That's the old Mason place out on the River Road. Fellow by the name of Long bought it a few years back and tacked that name on it.
What's he like?
Don't see much of him, said the druggist as he rang up the sale. Queer sort of man, I hear. Don't welcome visitors, and when people want to be let alone around here, folks most generally let 'em alone.
How do you get there?
6 miles out on the highway, and you turn to the left. It's about 3 miles down the river road, I reckon. Kind of lonesome country back in there, although the road is used a heap. Long's land's back up clear to the Potomac. You'll see a sign over his gate.
Val thanked the man and went back to the car.
As soon as they got away from the little village, it became apparent that the druggist had not been wrong when he had described the country as lonesome. Mist was rising off the river, swirling across the stabbing headlight beams in ghostly streamers. The damp smell of the river bottoms off to the left of the road poured in through the car windows. Great oaks and poplars grew alongside the road, and they passed many stretches of scrub pine woodland. Now and then a small house was visible behind a whitewashed picket fence, but for the most part the country seemed deserted. Nora Beamish said flatly,
"I don't like this country. It gives me the creeps. I didn't know you could get this wild so close to Washington."
"You should have stayed in the city and gone to sleep," said Val. It was the wrong thing to say.
"Young man, I know my business," Nora crushed him. "I may have the creeps, but I'm as good as any man we'll find in this section. Nancy, give me a cigarette."
A match flared, and Nora Beamish had taken perhaps half a dozen puffs from her cigarette when a stout wire fence on the left of the road suddenly gave way to massive stone gateposts with a wooden arch between them. A lettered sign hanging from the arch said, "Oak Ridge Manor." Val cut the ignition and brought the car to a stop at the side of the road.
"Here we are," he said.
In the sudden silence which wrapped them, his voice sounded with startling clarity. Nancy chuckled softly.
"Broken down and everything. And where is the house?"
The fog was thicker, if anything, rolling its damp breath through the open car window at Val's side, swirling through the yellow glare of the headlights like endless, tenuous tentacles. The distant boom of frogs pulsed dismally on the night. It was a lonely, deserted spot. Nora Beamish said with conviction,
"Anyone who would park himself out in a place like this for very long must be a trifle addled. If anybody had told me this morning on the ship that I'd be here tonight, I'd have hooted them down."
Nevertheless, she followed Nancy with alacrity when Val stepped out and opened the rear door.
"You can wait in the car," Val told her.
"Young man," Nora answered majestically, "if Jim Gregg can't tell me what to do, it's useless for you to try. I came here to play a helpless old mother, and I'm going to hobble up to that house and play her. Save your breath."
"Hobble on," Val surrendered. "Let's go. I can't see the house, but it must be back there somewhere."
"Are you taking a gun?"
Nancy questioned.
"Hardly need one," Val assured her. "After all, we can't possibly be suspected. And with a helpless mother along, we'll fit the part perfectly."
"Nancy shan't stir one step from this car without a gun in the party," Nora said firmly. "She's a helpless girl, and I don't like the looks of this place. It gives me the creeps."
"A gun it'll be then," Val agreed cheerfully.
He leaned in the car, pulled his bag out from their luggage, and slipped his automatic in his pocket. On second thought, he added the flashlight he always carried somewhere in his effects. They walked back to the gate and headed along the driveway into the fog. The hoarse booming of the frogs gradually grew louder, and by that Val knew they were approaching the river. Huge old trees lined the driveway, stretching heavy branches out over their heads. Once the fog parted briefly and he caught sight of a gibbous moon hanging high in the sky. But for the most part they walked blindly in the mist, which blotted and enfeebled the beam of his flashlight. And the walk seemed endless.
"I don't believe there's a house around here," Nora panted finally, and then said something not entirely ladylike as her heel turned on a stone and she lurched against Val. "Drat it," she grumbled. "I should have put on hunting boots."
Val himself was beginning to wonder how much farther they would have to walk. This estate of Oak Ridge Manor seemed to be endless. The drive made several turns, seeming to run almost in the shape of a sprawling S. He judged the house was invisible from the road. And then, without warning, a dark automobile appeared before them, and beyond it the lighted windows of a large house emitted a sickly glow through the mist.
"Thank heavens we won't have to wake them up," Nora remarked with relief.
Val turned the flash into the machine. It was empty, and bore DC license plates. Oak Ridge Manor, he judged, was having visitors this night. All the better. The drive widened into a big circle in front of the house, with a flower bed in the center, and they could make out dimly the looming bulk of a large colonial mansion, with a wing at each end. They started around the flower bed, and suddenly Nora stumbled again and gasped sharply as she jumped quickly aside.
"What is this?"
Val's light was on it a moment later, a huge Great Dane dog lying dead on the driveway with a trickle of blood staining the ground in front of its chest. It had been shot, and had not been dead long, as Val discovered when he touched it with his foot. The sight shocked them out of their calm.
"I don't like this," Nancy whispered sharply.
"I'd like to get my hands on the man who killed that beautiful animal," Nora exclaimed indignantly under her breath. "Look at him, poor thing."
Val looked at the house instead, looked warily. Of a sudden, the drear silence had taken on an ominous quality. He couldn't say why. After all, there were a score of reasons why the dog might have been killed. It might have been a strange dog, for instance, trespassing in some way. But nevertheless, the feeling persisted.
"Perhaps you two had better go back to the car," he suggested under his breath.
"We'll stick together,"
Nancy told him quietly.
"I'm not afraid," Nora Beamish insisted defiantly. "It takes more than a dead dog to upset me. Go on."
Val hesitated, and then against his better judgment led the way to the front door. It was made of heavy planks, with small diamond-shaped panes of leaded glass at the top. Curtains inside cut off the view beyond. He found a big wrought iron knocker breast high and used it. The clanging sounds seemed to echo back through the house, which, despite the lights, was strangely silent. The knocking was not answered. He repeated it, and while he waited, he roved the beam of the flash around the big dark front porch. Not 10 feet away, the bottoms of a pair of shoes caught his eye. It was a man, lying there on his face, with the bone handle of a knife sticking up grotesquely from under one shoulder blade. Chapter 7. The Woman Upstairs. Nancy Fraser saw that sight past Val's shoulder an instant later. Her fingers bit into his arm as she pressed close to him.
Is he dead?
She asked unsteadily.
"Looks that way," Val muttered, stepping forward to the side of the motionless body.
He stooped, caught a shoulder, and turned the face up. The flashlight showed a dapper, well-dressed young man with a sharp face, prominent nose, and tousled black hair. It was no one he had ever seen before. Nora had moved to the spot also. She did not cry out. She was calm as usual.
"Nancy, I think we had better go back to the machine."
"What do you think is happening here?"
Nancy asked Val swiftly.
"Haven't the slightest idea," he confessed. "But it looks bad."
Just then the front door opened, letting a bright swath of light out across the front porch. Val whirled around, sliding his hand into his pocket. A broad-shouldered, heavy-set man stepped out into the light and peered at them. He had a gun in his hand, and as he stared at them, the weapon slowly lowered to his side, and he asked gruffly,
"What's this?"
"I think you're the one to do the explaining," Val countered, walking toward him. "Who killed that man?"
"You aren't the sheriff?"
the stranger mumbled, looking at the two women.
"No, I'm not the sheriff."
"Then who the devil are you?"
Nora Beamish ranged alongside Val, and there was not the slightest trace of a quaver in her voice as she said firmly,
"Our car ran out of gasoline down on the road, and we came in here looking for a telephone or enough gasoline to take us on."
The man who stood there in the light had a wide, flat face with lumpy, muscular jowls, blue-black with a close-shaven beard. His eyes were narrowed. His mouth was a tight line and his manner suspicious as Nora Beamish spoke to him. But the suspicion gradually left.
"Out of gasoline, eh?"
he said.
"Yes," Nora answered calmly. "Have you any to spare? And while we're asking questions, what is that dead man doing there? It's horrible."
Val kept his hand on the automatic in his pocket. He was aware of the narrow eyes resting on the pocket for a moment, and suspected that the fellow knew what was in it. But the fact seemed to make no difference. They couldn't look very suspicious with Nora Beamish standing there very much the grand dame, asking imperious questions.
"I guess it does look pretty funny to find a thing like that on a front porch, doesn't it, madam?"
the man chuckled.
"The fact is, I'm waiting for the sheriff now. I thought when you knocked it was he. You see, this fellow, whoever he is,"
with a jerk of his head at the body,
"was prowling around here tonight with at least one other man. The dog ran out barking at them, and they shot him."
"They should have been shot themselves for that,"
Nora sniffed.
"My sentiments exactly, madam," she was assured. "I heard the disturbance, and ran out to see what was the matter. One of them took a shot at me in the dark. I made a good target against the light, I imagine. The bullet just missed me. See where it hit the side of the door?"
He turned and pointed to a small round hole in the wood at the side of the door, which Val had not noticed when he knocked.
"And so you stabbed him?"
Nora queried, wide-eyed. That drew another chuckle.
"No, madam, I did not stab him. I had stepped out without my gun, and I ran back inside and slammed the door. It was Big Buck, the N-word yard man, who threw that knife. He's quite handy with one, and he had dodged out at the side of the house when he heard the noise. Standing there, he saw one of the men run up on the porch and take a stand at the side of the door with a gun in his hand, evidently waiting for me to show myself again, madam. Buck didn't know what it was all about, but he knew I was in danger, and when I started to open the door again, having gotten my gun, Buck threw his knife, unfortunately with fatal effect. The man fell, and his companions must have gone one way while Buck went the other. When I stepped out on the porch with this revolver, I found the fellow breathing his last, and it took me 10 minutes or so to get the straight of the matter. I've telephoned the sheriff, and he said he would get out here as soon as he could."
"And that," said the man dryly,
"explains the gory scene, madam. If you people will step inside, you may use the telephone, and save yourselves the unpleasantness of being out here with him."
With a polite inclination of the head, he indicated the doorway hospitably.
"Thank you, we will do that,"
said Nora firmly, and she sailed inside before Val could say anything to her. Nancy looked at him inquiringly. Val quickly conned the facts.
"You say there were two of them?" he asked.
"At least that many."
"And the others ran?"
"I haven't seen anything more of them. I guess they didn't know how many men were out there in the darkness throwing knives, so they left while the leaving was good."
The man chuckled again. Galbraith had been intending to come here. He had been killed. Now violence had appeared at this house a few hours later. Was it the work of the Black Doctor? Val wondered. Was this house unaware of the danger threatening it? Had the Black Doctor or some of his men been closing in on it and been checked by an unexpected knife thrown out of the darkness? It looked that way. The mystery was growing thicker at every move, but this was the chance he had wanted to get inside the house. Val nodded slightly at Nancy and followed her into a wide, spacious hall.
"My name is Easton," he said calmly as their host joined them, closing the door behind them.
"Tilson is my name, sir,"
the other answered promptly. This was the man then to whom Raimi's wire had been sent. But what about Long, the city man who had bought the place several years before, according to the owner of the drugstore back in Hartsville? Val had been wondering about that all the way out. Long owned Oak Ridge Manor, yet Raimi had wired a J.B. Tilson. Did they live here together? Were they partners? Friends? Those were questions he wanted to ask, but didn't dare to, under the circumstances.
"You are the owner, I presume?"
he suggested, and received a negative shake of the head.
"No, Mr. Long is the owner here. He's upstairs in bed with a broken leg."
Nora Beamish had been looking around as they talked.
"You have a nice place here," she complimented.
"Thank you, madam," Tilson bowed. "I think it is myself."
He was a curious combination of hard-boiled sophistication and ultra-polite civility. The fact that a man lay dead on the front porch did not seem to disturb him in the slightest. In fact, he seemed amused, if anything. Val surprised a quirk at the corner of his mouth that was suppressed almost instantly, and since the telephone was not pressed on them at once, he talked casually.
"Do you have a farm here?"
Tilson shook his head.
"Only a vegetable garden. I guess there isn't enough money in farming these days to tempt John, and since he has enough money to live on, he lets the place lie as it is." "I imagine the women folks are upset by this business tonight,"
Nora Beamish observed shrewdly.
"There are no women in the house," Tilson told her. "John is a bachelor, and my wife is in California."
"Where all wives should be," said Nora.
Tilson was the perfect host as he smiled at her sadly.
"There are different opinions about that, of course, madam. I miss Mrs. Tilson a great deal. Won't you ladies sit down? Mr. Easton, the telephone is in the back of the house. I'll take you there. Better get the call in before the sheriff gets here."
Talking to this man, looking about the spacious hall, listening to the peaceful quiet of the old house, Val had felt increasingly that something was wrong. All this did not hook up with Galbraith's errand to this country, with Greg's declaration that the man had been empowered to spend £1 million, with the British agent that had evidently been tagging Galbraith, and the cold-blooded way both men had died. What could one of the great powers find interesting in this spot? In this man Tilson, or his friend who lay upstairs with a broken leg? What did New York have to do with this peaceful, lonely spot on the banks of the Potomac? And while those thoughts had flashed through Val's mind, he was wondering about Tilson also. For despite the ultra-politeness, the soft, almost genial manner of the man, the effect fell flat. He didn't look like a country gentleman or a man who would be satisfied to hibernate in a quiet spot like this. He looked hard, cold, clever. And every once in a while there was a glint in his eyes, a cat-like scrutiny of his surroundings, a cold, quickly caught inflection of his voice that bore out that impression. No, the man didn't ring true. The situation didn't ring true. There was peace in the air, but it was a taut, quivering peace, a quiet that seemed charged with electric tension. Instead of quieting the nerves, it put them on edge. Val had a very definite feeling that all this pleasantry might change instantly to tragedy. And against all the facts he had marshaled, there was the evidence of the dead dog and the lifeless corpse out there on the front porch. That dead man belonged to the cities. He wasn't a casual country prowler. He didn't belong out here in the mist-filled night, far from houses or people, unless the facts were right. Unless there were more to all this than appeared on the surface. Unless Galbraith had been intending to come here, and the Black Doctor was also interested in the place. That was evidence that could not be disputed. Val wished the women were back in the machine heading toward Washington. He was, he told himself, a fool for bringing them out there. He could have done the job just as well himself. "I'll use your telephone," he agreed briskly, "and then we'll get out to our car and cause you no further trouble."
"It is a pleasure," Tilson assured him. "It does this house good to have women in it once in a while."
And the words were barely out of the man's mouth as he turned to the door on his right when the quiet of the house was rudely shattered by a rush of feet upstairs. And following that came the high, shrill, terror-stricken cry of a woman. They all froze in their tracks, staring toward the top of the wide, sweeping stairs that led up to the second floor, whence that scream had come. Val's eyes dropped to Tilson, whose head had hunched forward and whose face had darkened with an ugly scowl. That was all the proof Val needed of his suspicions. Tilson had lied flatly when he said there were no women in that house, and that woman who had screamed was in mortal terror or great pain. It drove a shiver down his back.
"What's wrong up there?"
Nora Beamish uttered explosively, swinging around on Tilson. It all happened in seconds. Later on, Val was to wonder why he hadn't moved fast enough. But he didn't have a chance, couldn't guess what was going to happen. After the scream cut off sharp, the running feet still pounded upstairs. They reached the head of the stairs and started down. The four of them, standing below in the hall, saw the feet, the legs, the whole figure of a man dashing down the stairs. He was hatless, coatless, shirtless. A sleek, pudgy form, half running, half falling down the stairs in his mad haste. His hair was rumpled wildly. Blood was streaming from the corner of his mouth, spattering the white front of his undershirt and his arms, and one hand brandished a gleaming revolver. With a shock, Val recognized Galbraith's New York visitor, Raimi. Only now the sleek unctuousness of the man had given way to a wild, uncontrollable fright and desperation. His face was twisted in a mask of terror as he catapulted to the turn of the stairs.
"Get back!"
Val cried at Nancy Fraser. His arm swept her roughly back against the wall. And an instant later, as Raimi reached the turn in the stairs, their ears were deafened by the report of a gun. It was Tilson shooting, standing there calmly, jaws clenched until the bunching muscles ridged out. His gun spat once, twice, three times. Raimi's legs gave way under him. The terror-stricken mask of his face suddenly looked horrible as it was struck by a bullet. His body raced forward, the gun flying from his fingers. And as Nora Beamish lost her poise and screamed aloud, Raimi's limp body tumbled and bounced and slid to the floor of the hall at their feet.